Bremner Real 6, was this Serbian pilot involved in any other interesting events?
Yes, he wanted some more clothes, and he was going to fly to Salonika.
He wanted some more clothes?
Yes. And when we knew he was flying, we going to Salonika, we all gave him commissions to buy all sorts of things, stockings, shorts, underclothes, everything. And when he came back, he had his machine again in this this Morris Shorthorn. The nacelle was absolutely stacked with commissions, absolutely stacked. And he made a shocking landing, broke his undercarriage, and the undercarriage struts started to, the machine started to settle down on these struts, and the struts started to come up through the bottom wing. And all he could do was to weep on the French commander's shoulder and say, mon commandant, c'est la première fois que j'ai cassé un avion, c'est la première fois. And while all this time, the machine was slowly settling down on a broken undercarriage. It was just opposite my flight shed, so I sent my flight sergeant out and said, you better go and chop the machine up. He took a couple of trestles out and got the men on and lifted each wing up and put the trestles under, and then she settled down onto the trestles. But the poor Serbian pilot wasn't thinking of anything more.
What was the intensity of enemy air activity while you were on Thaisa?
Very, very little. They used to come over, send one machine over occasionally, and he used to drop a bomb or two, but never did any damage. I think he was much more there to have a look and see what we were doing, if we were up to anything. And he usually used to appear from behind the hills, fairly high up from behind the hills. And by the time I got into a machine, and especially as I had to take off in the wrong direction and turn before I could climb, by that time he disappeared behind the hills. The time I got over the hills, he was out of sight. And the only thing I used to do, I suppose it scares me now, but I didn't mind then, I used to start turning as I was taking off. Before I was airborne, I'd start turning. And I had cane skids, sort of skids under the wingtips, and sometimes I hit those on the ground before I got into the air. I shouldn't like to do it now.
How did the living conditions on Thaisa compare with those which you'd experienced on Imbros?
Oh, they were much more primitive. We were in the one side of the aerodrome was an olive grove, and the shade of an olive tree is a very overrated thing. Yeah, we lived in tents in a tented mess, and I think the worst disadvantage we had to put up with were the flies. And if you were eating jam, you had to wave your hand over the jam all the way from the plate to your mouth to prevent you eating flies. And the latrines were the most primitive things, and all open at the round way of the seat. And the flies used to crawl over your bottom as you were sitting there, most unpleasant. It was said that the only time to use latrines was just before lunch. But as soon as the gong went, all the flies left the latrines and went to the mess tent.
What was the health of the unit like? Did it suffer much as a result of these kind of conditions?
I can't remember us ever having serious trouble. We had a doctor there who was very good. But we did have malaria, quite virulent malaria, and we ran out of quinine. We used to beg and borrow quinine from any of the monitors that came near enough for us to come and visit us. And that was what I finally went down with. And I had malaria and I did get a sort of dysentery then. And I was evacuated to the army hospital in Stavros, where I had a very high temperature. And in a tented ward with I don't know what it was in the shade, but the temperature was awful. When I recovered a bit, I very fortunately ran into an old friend of my father's, who was Brigadier General White Thompson, and he lent me a horse and a groom. And I used to ride about there until I got my strength back.
Now, after your period of convalescence in Stavros, you were posted back to the United Kingdom in the summer of 1916. Were you immediately given another operational posting?
No, I was sent to Hasler Hospital, the naval hospital at Gosport, for observation, as it appeared that I had some form of malaria. Although I had most of the outward symptoms of malaria, they never found proper traces of the malarial parasite in me.
What impressions did you get of Hasler as a service hospital? What was it like? How was it organized, and what were the conditions like there?
Well, it was undoubtedly a very good hospital, and very comfortable. I think the difficulty was the very rigid discipline and the rather limited experience of the real naval surgeons. When they had attached to the hospital a number of civil doctors, temporary rear admirals and so forth, who really were experts in their particular line. That's wrong, really.
What sort of difficulties do you have in mind? In what way did this create difficulties?
Well, it didn't seem to run completely smoothly. I was given a letter of introduction to one of the temporary surgeon admirals, a surgeon called Cheadle, who was a very famous surgeon and a hail fellow well met. And I was walking across the lawn on one occasion when Cheadle came up behind me, slapped me on the back and said, "Hello, young man, how are you getting on?" And I rather jokingly told him it was rather a terrible place, because if I felt hungry on Monday at lunch and wanted a second helping, I could fall in and see the Surgeon General on Tuesday, and I get my second helping on Wednesday. And he roared with laughter over that. Shortly afterwards, I was hauled by the matron, who told me off very severely that I, as a medical case, had complained to a surgeon. I explained to matron that I hadn't really complained, that I had a letter of introduction to Surgeon Admiral Cheadle from Sister Agnes, and we were talking and joking, and I told him about it.
Who was Sister Agnes?
Sister Agnes was Mr. Kaiser.
Miss?
De Kaiser.
Yes.
And she had started the King Edward the VII Hospital for nursing home, it was then, for officers in Grosvenor Square, or somewhere near Victoria, which has now developed into the King Edward VII Hospital.
What do you remember of her?
She was a great lady, a real martinet. My first time I saw her, she'd been a friend of my brother's, and he'd given me a letter of introduction to her, and when I went in to see her, I said, "Oh, my brother sends his kindest regards to you," and she said, "He did not. He either sent his love or his chin-chins. Which was it?" So I said, "Well, I'm sure it was his love, Sister Agnes." She said, "Well, I think so, probably." We got on very well after that, but unfortunately I never went to her nursing home.
Now, your first major posting on your return to England, and I got the date wrong a bit earlier, it was towards the end of 1916, was to Redcar, where you in due course became executive officer. What was the responsibilities of the executive officer?
Executive officer corresponded rarely to the adjutant in the army. He was the housekeeper, in a way, of the station, and also responsible under the CO for discipline. The he was responsible for seeing that the stores were issued properly. He had defaulters, anyone who committed a crime in inverted commas, was brought up before him in the morning, and he dished out the appropriate punishments.
I see.
Whatever they might be.
When you got to Redcar, what was the organisation of the station like as you found it?
Well, as a when I went there, the CO was just new. Fortunately, he was my old CO from Thaiso. He had just come, and the executive officer had just come, and I was the assistant to the executive officer. When he arrived, he found the whole station organised into flights, so that
wasn't that normal?
No, not normal. Your flying your flying personnel is should be organised in flights, squadrons, etc. But personnel who ran the station, we made our own electric light, we had our own power plant. Well, all their engineers came under the engineer in charge of the officer in charge of that particular section. You know, with the cooks, the various orderlies, mess hands, and so on. So the new number one was
So all branches on the station had been organised into flights, regardless of whether
regardless
they were flying.
Yes.
Yeah. Did that create any particular problems? I mean, why did you regard it as being unsatisfactory?
Well, I think it was unsatisfactory because the line of responsibility didn't go up a logical path. There's no reason why, if a cook did something wrong, he should come before a flight officer. He should come up before who's ever in charge of the cooks, petty officer, chief petty officer in charge of the cooks, and then probably straight to the first lieutenant, and so on.
And that would be the normal chain of.
That would be
command.
The normal chain of organisation, and we put everything into that way. The idea of the executive officer was that he should have no work to do when he'd finished organizing, that he should be just free for any emergency that came up, and that he should know exactly who was responsible and who could be responsible by being intimately concerned with any particular thing.
What did you do about this state of affairs then?
Oh, just difficult to describe how you reorganized. You just saw that the officers or chief petty officers in charge of various things really knew who they had to report to.
Now, apart from this question of reorganization, were there any other problems that you found you had to contend with?
The executive officer left before he quite finished the reorganization, and I took his place. One of the things I had to do was check all my store books, and I found that I was 2 tons of potatoes short. That doesn't necessarily mean that we didn't have enough potatoes. It merely meant that the accounting side was wrong, and that we'd had so many potatoes issued to us, and the accounting side only showed a certain amount issued. So I had to make those up in some way or another. I did that by giving instructions to the storekeeper that the ratings were to have their full potato allowance. When he issued to the sergeant's mess, he just made a full allowance and then took 2 or 3 potatoes back off each mess, threw them back, and the officer's mess had half of what they were entitled to. One side of the aerodrome was bounded by a hedge, so that any aeroplane which came over the hedge, landed over the hedge, it was quite a little way before it touched the aerodrome. In that area, just under by the hedge, I borrowed a plough from a farmer and got it ploughed up for 20, 30 yards, something like that. I also managed to scrounge seed potatoes, planted it. It was known as the number one's potato patch. And whenever a defaulter was run into me for some minor offence, I used to go and look for them sometimes. I would always give him 1 hour of 10 ale, which meant extra duty, an hour's extra duty, and his extra duty was to go and cultivate my potato patch.
So you make good this deficiency by a combination of short lessening the issue, yes, and growing potatoes.
Yes, with the time I handed over, that was all straight.
What was morale like at Redcar? Did you apply any particular devices to keep it at a reasonable level?
I think the morale was very good. It was a very happy station. Our CO was a first class. He was a major in the Marines, first class man. Led the whole thing extremely well. One of the things we did was to have hut competitions. All the men slept in huts. I suppose there were probably 20, 30 men in each hut. And they slept on bedboards, and the bedding had to be rolled up. And they were